You're listening to Sound Medicine. I'm Barbara Lewis. Since January, Medicare has been paying clinicians for non-face-to-face care coordination for patients with two or more chronic illnesses. Dr. Louise Aronson is a professor of geriatrics at the University of California, San Francisco School of Medicine. I asked her how the new rules will change how care is delivered.
Well, it's actually pretty terrific. So a lot of primary care has to do with arranging services and dealing with medications and talking to patients and caregivers. And up until this point, we have really only been reimbursed for face-to-face interactions. So all kinds of other things that are known to be really good for good care of patients were not reimbursed, and people basically had to take it out of their own time. It's been one of the strains on primary care that there's so much work that isn't counted in the sort of fiscal sense. And so this is really recognizing that this is an essential part of good primary care by adding a benefit that compensates physicians for it.
Why might people with two or more chronic illnesses need this service?
Well, as people become more chronically ill, and some people have two chronic illnesses and don't need this, it depends a little bit on your definition of chronic illness and the severity. They actually specify that it's not just having two chronic conditions, because some people have ones that are in great shape, but one's expected to last more than a year, but with risk of death, decompensation, or decreased function. So that means either a chronic illness that's progressing or, you know, known to be progressive or causing increasing functional, you know, has sort of reached a stage in its disease trajectory that it's causing more harm to the person. So some examples of that would include congestive heart failure, which as it gets worse, people are known to decompensate, to require hospitalization, and to functionally decline. So it's not necessarily every chronic illness, but it will cover people who have really, because of the way the system's been set up, not been given the kind of supports that are shown to help them. And again, heart failure is a good example of that when you look at the care management services that people like Michael Rich and others have done. It's made a huge difference.
And Dr. Aronson, give me an example of how this would work. I'm trying to imagine somebody in the primary care office coordinating care and what that would mean. Multiple phone calls? I'm just not sure.
Okay. That's a great question. So there are actually many different ways it can look, but you might know that somebody isn't doing so well. And part of it, you know, imagine if we stick with the heart failure example since I've started that way. Part of why they're eating what they're eating is because they could only walk as far as the corner store. And the corner store, with their income or what they can carry, they get foods that are loaded in salt. So then they eat salt and they decompensate and they end up back in the hospital. Well, so you might think, oh, this is a problem. I could get a meal delivery service. And then it turns out they've got other functional things and they're getting socially isolated and they're scared to go out and walk. So maybe if they went to a day center, they would get more exercise, and actually that would lead to not only the disease not getting worse, but potentially it getting better and them getting better on a variety of other metrics such as their arthritis or depression or a variety of other chronic diseases that often go with heart failure. So you would need to then coordinate with the meal service. You might need to get some care at home and deal with those caregivers and fill out paperwork. You might take some time working with a social worker to figure out which adult day center it would be. Then you might coordinate with the nurse at the day center to say, hey, can you be following these vital signs and this patient's weight? Because if it goes up this much, I'm going to be concerned that we're on the verge of an exacerbation. And if you call me, I can then call you back, get paid for that, and we can intervene before this person ends up in the hospital and suffers more decompensation and more functional loss.
And how popular is it already, and how popular do you expect it to become?
Well, you know, it's pretty hard to say. I'm actually in New York, not in California now, and I was asking around, and it seemed that some people are starting to try it. A lot of systems are looking into how do we do this. So it comes with a variety of requirements about having an electronic health record and staff with 24 access to it and the coordination of transitions. There are just many ways you could implement it. So I think because it's only been around for, you know, less than 2 months, people are still figuring out how to do it and are trying out solutions. It's a little hard for me to tell at this point how popular it is. To the degree that prices drive things, you know, we're sort of transitioning from a fee-for-service sector, you know, a healthcare society, to a different one on the one hand. On the other hand, the new one is more cost-conscious. So if this is a way of incentivizing people to do what seems to be better care, I'm hoping it will become popular and will also just be the first step towards more payment and system structures that support what we know leads to better care. Do we know, implemented on this scale with lots of different ways of applying it, that it will work, and has it worked in every trial? No. But there's a lot of suggestive evidence that this is better care for people.
And before providers can start charging Medicare for their service, their patients have to agree to it, right? I mean, what questions do people need to ask their doctors before they say yes?
Yeah, so I think that could be a big stumbling block in other systems. So people might wonder, why do I need this? I felt like I was fine already, right? So you would have to explain, hey, you remember last year when this happened, or this is a new thing we're trying, and you know, you've been having a little more trouble in the last 6 months, and we think by putting you in here, we're going to be able to keep you in better shape and keep you out of the hospital.
So is that really kind of the take-home message for seniors with multiple chronic illnesses who might be interested in the service, saying, hey, well, this is going to lead to better care?
I think it really should lead to better care. I mean, it gives people all kinds of things that are really helpful. So access to community and social services that can help them remain in their homes and functioning well. One of the things that older adults fear most is ending up in a nursing home. And as their burden of chronic disease increases, often they have sort of functional and basic social challenges. And so if their physician or the practice, because it's not just physicians, are incentivized to help them solve those problems so that they can remain where they want to live and functioning as well as they can given their ailments, that's a huge plus for patients.
Well, Dr. Louise Aronson, thank you so much for talking with me on Sound Medicine.
My pleasure.